Okay, hello out there. This is the first episode of Bad News Canada that I'll be playing publicly here. Once a month, going forward on the Dark Topic feed, I'm going to be playing this Bad News Canada podcast that I'm doing with Jordan Bonaparte of the Canadian Gothic, formerly of the Nighttime Podcast. We've been friends for a long time. And I do a thing called Jack Luna's Bad News, where I cover some of the worst news around the world when it comes to true crime on my exclusive feeds, Patreon, Spotify, Dark Topic Plus on Apple. And he heard it, and we started talking, and we've decided to go once a month just on Canada when it comes to bad news. So expect this to be a part of the Dark Topic sphere. Going forward, you'll have new Dark Topics coming out. This won't affect anything, especially since Jordan's doing most of the work. He's my favorite podcaster of all time, and it's a real pleasure to work with him. I hope that you enjoy.
Who's that scary face across from me? Is that Jack Luna?
I think you're looking at yourself, buddy. I'm looking good, I thought.
I've been seeing too much of you lately, man. It seems like we just... I didn't talk to you for about a year, and now twice in as many weeks, I think, I got your face staring back at me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, some things are meant to be, Sherry.
That's right. How you doing over there? And by over there, I mean the other side of the country?
Yeah, out here. It's cold. It's, you know, it's Canada. It's super cold, man. Especially when you smoke with the door open. Over where you're at, I heard you getting some snow.
We're getting whacked tonight. 10-ish centimeters. Enough snow that I had to get some... I don't know if they do this out your way, but we call it like storm chips. People will get like snacks and stuff in case they're stormed in. We got some of that. Also got some gas for the snowblower. I'm ready for the long haul if it comes to that. But really what I'm just hoping for is that power stays intact for the duration of our talk tonight, because it's... I don't know if you'll pick it up in the microphones, but the wind is howling outside my window. But it's kind of appropriate for what we're going to be talking tonight. It's like a dark and stormy night, and we're going to be getting into some dark and stormy topics. Before we introduce to people what we're doing and what this is all about, let's take a page out of Keep Canada Weird's book and talk about our drinks. Since we got a lot of dark topics to discuss tonight, I know it's going to be some heavy lifting. I brought some tea with me. I got a caffeinated tea because I need a little buzz. I had a big day preparing for the storm. I wanted a little pick-me-up to really bring us through tonight's discussion. You got a drink over there?
Oh, my God. If I knew you were getting that wild, I would have gotten some whiskey or something like that. But instead, I got something from the Trans-Canada Brewing Company out here in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
Oh.
It's called Lamp Lighter.
Okay.
And Lamp Lighter refers to when the lamp gets lit when a goal gets scored in hockey.
Okay. I like it.
The most Canadian drink I could find, because I knew that we were going to be premiering Bad News Canada.
I was actually thinking about getting an alcoholic drink, because on Keep Canada Weird, which is our weird news roundup on Canadian Gothic, I'm always drinking soda pop. I was thinking, since Jack and I are getting into the heavy, dark, bad news stuff, maybe I should get an alcoholic drink. But then I was like, no, I'll be stumbling over my words even worse than normal after the second half of the show. So I'm going with tea, but that's all good. Let's get into what we're doing here. So you spoiled it a bit there. Bad News Canada. Do you want to introduce kind of the basic idea? Because really what this is our pilot episode, but also almost like if we were carpenters, this would be us just beginning the initial framing of what is eventually going to be the best podcast series that has ever been released.
I believe it. I hope so. Yeah. Bad News Canada. I mean, most news that you get is bad news, but I think we're just being straight up and literal about it. We're going to give you the worst stuff that we can find out of Canada, and every day you hear it, we're just going to derive it directly from our sources. Mm-hmm. Our sources being just our local media, whatever we can find. So just, it's bad. What was it that we said before Bad News Canada when we were coming up with the idea? You sent it in the email to me.
I don't remember. We had a few ideas, but ultimately what we wanted to come up with was a show that curated a collection of like the worst news stories. The stories that are almost more like nightmares than news stories is sort of what I was thinking. And as far as like what brought this on or why we wanted to do it. For one, we've been talking for a long time about finding something to do together and doing like individual stories, like an episode of the two of us together talking about, you know, blank event from start to finish. I just don't know if that would really work. So we thought something a bit more conversational, a bit more topical, covering developing stories, but focusing on the kind of stuff we're into, which is, again, the stories that are closer to nightmares than they are news stories. And there are a lot. People will see when we go through the stories tonight, they will say, like, I thought Canada was this nice, peaceful place, but this sounds like hell on earth.
Exactly. That's the thing. Everyone says that Canadians are polite and whatnot, and sure, we are, but I mean, some bad stuff happens here too. I often look at, and this is a little off track, but the way that the Canadian troops behaved when World War II was going on. And if you ever watch some of those old videos, they talk about, like, the Dutch, even the Germans, talked about how much they feared Canadians because, yes, they appear to be nice, but when they get down and dirty, it gets pretty freaking dirty, man. Mm. And that's not to pump up what these people do in these crimes by any means. It's just to pump up the way you and I are, man. We're a real problem. We're a real problem.
We are. But I think with the perception that Canada doesn't have heinous crimes and that, you know, the horrible crime is an American problem, I think a lot of that has to do with Canadian media. Our media, like our news in Canada, is a lot less sensational than American news. And there's a lot more privacy. Like if I don't know, if there's these horrible 911 calls or body cam footage of the guy getting shot in the US, it's like that stuff's already released the next morning and it's on the news. In Canada, we don't really have that. And I think because of that, our media is less sensational, which makes it so that our horrible stories don't get spread far and wide the way the Americans do. But as people who will listen to the Bad News Canada series will learn, the worst of the worst are here in Canada, and you just may not have heard the stories. We have three we're going to go through tonight, and all three of them, as I was researching them and putting all this together, I thought, like, this is the worst story I've ever heard. And then I would go on to the next one, and I would say it again.
For sure, for sure. And I want to put this out there. We're not proud of this stuff. The way that I was just talking right there, I act like I'm proud of what we're about to be talking about, what's going on here in Canada. No, I'm just trying to say, yes, often in true crime, I've even had people say to me, why don't you get your own crimes to talk about? Americans, you know, or people from England.
Because you're the host and creator of Dark Topic. You do stories from around the world, right?
Yeah. Mostly in the States.
Well, and that's probably because, I don't know if I'm putting words in your mouth, but is the reason for that because you have better access to the information related to the stories?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know that most of my audience is American, to be honest with you. And they're interested in those. So am I. I cover a lot of serial killers, and most of the serial killers historically have come from the States, at least that have been well documented.
Yeah, I'm covering specifically Canadian. So I think Bad News Canada is a good, like, middle line or common ground for you and I to meet on. It's Canadian, but it's dark. It's interesting. It's something we want the listeners involved in. So I'm going to, like I do on my weekly Weird News Roundup, Keep Canada Weird, we're going to open the doors for anyone who wants to send a voicemail to contribute to the show in any way. If you go to thecanadiangothic.com/contact, there is a spot where you can, there's a voice recorder and you can send us a voice message. And anyone who has their voice aired on the show does qualify for a free swag pack. So I'll send stickers. I don't have any Dark Topic ones yet.
For sure. I don't have any either. Well, so that's a real problem.
I'll send you some. How about that?
Please figure it out.
We most recently collaborated together on the Kenora bank robbery explosion. And there was something you said in that episode that had a listener contact me via voicemail. And I think this will just give a sense of the reach of this program that we're going to be creating here. This listener wants to respond to your suggestion that Mennonites don't listen to podcasts.
Good day, Jordan. I was just listening to your podcast about that bank robber that exploded. I just wanted to correct your host there. he was saying there's no Mennonites listening. Turns out I grew up Mennonite, so, and I'm listening to your podcast. Just figured I'd let you know. love your podcast. I also listen to Keep Canada Weird, which seems to be my favorite. Keep doing your good work, guys. And I just had to let you know that at there's Mennonites listening to your podcast.
There you go, Jack. We're not even 10 minutes into our first episode, and you're already getting criticized and corrected. How about
It won't be the first time. It will not be the first time. Listen, the thing about that blew me away. I thought there was a better chance of a deaf person listening than a Mennonite listening. But
Oh, there you go. That was his name is Andrew, and yes, Mennonites listen. He's living proof.
former.
Oh, did he say he was former Mennonite?
I believe so.
Okay, so it's yet to be determined if actual practicing Mennonites listen.
Yeah.
We'll find out. Let's get into it here. We'll take a quick break now that we've introduced the series. When we get back, we're going to hear the worst story I've ever heard involving horses, and probably the most shocking story I've ever heard coming out of Canada, at least until the next two we'll get into after that. But we're going to hear about the sexual assault on a horse in Vernon, BC, after a quick break.
Giddy up.
Jack Luna, the first story comes to us in the form of a listener recommendation. I got this actually as a topic suggestion for Keep Canada Weird, which is my weird news roundup. The story is certainly not appropriate for Keep Canada Weird, but here's how it was pitched to me.
Hi guys, it's your correspondent in Bedeque, Cape Breton. I found a very weird, very disturbing article today. The headline says, "Suspect arrested after BC woman says her horses were sexually assaulted."
So I don't need her to explain what happened because we can get it straight from the horse owner's mouth is how we'll do this.
Nice.
This, I
Nice.
guess we should give a content warning. This is a story that involves a crime against a horse, and it is frigging awful. A deeply disturbing incident is under investigation in Vernon, BC, after a man was arrested in connection with the alleged sexual assault of horses at a rural equestrian center. The case came to light when the property owner reviewed security camera footage in the middle of the night and realized a crime was unfolding in real time. Let's listen to a short clip and buckle up for this one.
I actually was physically nauseous. It was the most disturbing thing.
Erica Van Meenen and her 10-year-old son were home Friday night when her phone lit up with notifications from the security camera in her horse stables.
But my horse was looking very bright-eyed and aware that something was going on, so I scroll to the next clip, and that's when a man walks by.
Van Meenen called police. When Vernon RCMP arrived, she and an officer watched her surveillance video. It showed a man allegedly violating her horse.
He goes and gets a stool and comes back and commits the offense. And after he did that and she tried to get away from him.
RCMP declined an on-camera interview. However, in a statement, police said the suspect fled the property prior to officers arriving. A police dog search team conducted an extensive search of the property, but were unable to locate a suspect at the time.
It has never crossed my mind that somebody would actually do that. And I've never had a stranger sneak onto my property.
RCMP say a criminal offense was committed inside the horse's enclosed pen. As of Monday, a suspect has been identified. The investigation is ongoing.
I don't think he's been here before, but I can't say that with 100% certainty.
She believes Yola wasn't the only horse approached by the man.
Some other horses seemed like their blankets were tampered with as well.
The spirited, smiley horse medically okay after the incident, but
it definitely has sent a scare through the community, and I am very thankful that I have a very large, not friendly dog.
Whoa, that's heavy duty.
The horse owner says, like, I never thought this could happen. It's like, yeah, I've heard of stories like this, but it's usually somewhere on the other side of the world, not something happening in Vernon, BC, and especially not something happening in front of like a security camera where this happens. The guy's like 20 feet away from a security camera.
That's the thing with these security cameras. We're catching all kinds of things that people do that are strange. It's probably been going on for quite some time, Jordan. I'm honestly not surprised that the horse didn't show any signs of damage from a human, because I don't know, horses do it all the time, and they're built a little different, but nasty business.
Disturbing, absolutely disturbing. So this woman, the owner of the horse and the equestrian center that we hear from in that news clip, she was in her house when she got the notice on her phone. Like, you know, someone is, you know, when you, if you have a video doorbell, it gets motion and it lets you know. It alerted her. And when she looked, she watched this happen in real time. And I don't know if people listening caught it in the audio, but what she sees is, and this speaks to, this guy certainly did this before. He goes in and he's approaching the horses, and she says their blankets were disturbed.
Yeah.
Since it's night and it's a little cold, they have these kind of blankets that they're wearing. He must be looking in the blankets to see maybe which ones are male and which ones are female.
Oh.
But then what he does is he walks off and gets a stool.
Yeah.
And brings a stool in the pen. So
I get it.
I don't need to explain it, but she sees this happen. That is like absolutely, I don't know if terrifying is the word. It is absolutely disgusting.
It's disgusting. He planned this. He was ready to, you know what really freaked me out was, like, afterwards I saw the video. The horse followed him out. It's an animal. It doesn't really know what went on. And what I'm seeing there is, like, I didn't see the whole act happen, obviously. They cut that part. Thankfully.
Thank God. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they did have a clip in of him rubbing the horse, like petting the horse's head, the way you would if you, like, oh, this is a nice horse, kind of rubbing their nose. To see this guy do that with a stool in his hand is sickening.
A stool all over him, I bet, too. The thing about it for me where I take solace in is that I don't believe the horse cares either way. Really, way, because again, like, you have farmers putting big gloves on their arms and shoving them into horses to inseminate them and stuff like that. It would have taken it as just a human doing something it needed to do with it while it's in captivity. Yeah.
But what about this guy who did this? Like, they have crystal clear video of him walking off. Like, how disturbed would someone have to be? It is illegal. I looked into this a bit because I kind of wondered, like, what the legality of the whole thing is. Because, again, to me, it's so shocking and unexpected that I was almost like, are there even laws ready to handle this? And there are two that come into play. One is simply the bestiality law in Canada, which says if every person who commits bestiality, which is having sex with an animal, is guilty of an indictable offense and liable to imprisonment for a term not exceeding 10 years. So the worst that'll happen to this guy is 10 years in prison.
Hey, man, this guy, they got a good shot of his face. Poor words. No, not really. So, like, they're going to find this guy. There's a straight-up shot of his face, right?
Very clear. Like, it's where he goes into the pen. What it is on the top of one of the posts for the fence that is right next to the gate he walks in. That's where the security camera is. So that camera has a video of him looking straight at the camera while doing this with the horse from, it seems like it's like 20 feet away, but you're asking whether or not he'll get arrested. I got one quick update for you.
Nice.
And this is going to be our first moment where we say, I hate the bail system here in Canada.
All right.
Here it comes.
A man caught on camera allegedly violating a horse at a Vernon Equestrian Center has been arrested. Vernon North Okanagan RCMP confirmed they were called to a trespassing incident, but the suspect fled prior to their arrival. RCMP confirmed the footage revealed a criminal offense had occurred within an enclosed animal pen on the property. The man has been arrested but released from custody pending further investigation. No charges have been laid at this time. Van Meenen says there's evidence to suggest other horses at her center may also have been assaulted.
What, they got him and then they let him go?
So they got him. They didn't charge him and they released him despite having the video of it. Now, the not charging him, I can kind of understand because maybe it would take a little bit of time for, you know, they got to do the investigation and talk to everybody and do this and do that. So that may take a couple days. But I feel like this is a crime where you should be held in custody indefinitely. Like, it's not like he killed somebody, but it is just so disturbed.
No, but it's indicative of poor manners at the very least. I mean, charged. I wish the freaking horse had charged him.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Hey, and that's clearly what he deserved. If there was a natural justice system that the world and nature provided, that's what would have happened. He would have got a kick to the chest or a kick to the nuts and never been able to do anything like this again. But
absolutely.
The fact that there are people out there that late at night, they think, you know what, I'm going to sneak on that farm. There's horses there. I can do what I want to do. Like, that is so messed up to me that that is actually a thing. And maybe I'm focusing on the least damaging part of the whole thing. But for me, it's the idea of him bringing this, like pulling the stool over.
Yeah.
It seems like he's done this before.
Yes. No, totally. And like you said, the checking under the blankets, possibly looking for a female or a male, whatever he's into.
Yeah.
It's wild.
The police say in that news clip they were responding to a trespassing complaint, but I think they knew right from the beginning that this was different than trespassing. There was one little clip that didn't make it into those news reports that I just thought was interesting, because I thought, like, how would you explain to the cop what's happening? And this is just a quote from a news article. The owner of the horse who called the police, she's describing her experience talking to the cop. She says, "The officer's face just dropped. We both said, 'Oh my God.' He then asked me right away if I was okay, and I just answered, 'I'm simply in shock.'" So, and this is the moment when, like, the cop's there and she's showing on her phone the video of this happening.
Yeah. So they, man.
Like, they got him in 4K.
Check this out. Oh my God, I know, and we're laughing, and our faces are kind of going screwy about this, because it is that way. Again, I'll go back to, I just know that the horse probably doesn't see it one way or the other, but this guy is showing signs of being a really screwed up character, and the fact that they got a hold of him, I mean, come on, man, let's take a look at this guy. Something's going on, something's real wrong.
They haven't released his name publicly, although an identity is circulating online that seems to have a storied past, but I'm hesitant and won't even go there until it's confirmed who he actually is. But, you know, when this guy's name comes out and it's associated with this story, you know, that's I can't think of much worse that you could have your name attached to. But let me say this is we started this segment off with a voicemail from a listener from Bedeck telling us about this story. That voicemail ends where she shared an experience she had that goes to show that maybe this isn't as rare and uncommon as we would like to think that it is. She wants to share a horse assault story she had from Sweden. Here it comes. Oof, okay.
She says in the article she's never heard of this happening before. However, I used to live in Sweden in a really small town called Ludvika, and very rural, very small. And I don't think they ever found the guy, but there was a serial horse sexual assaulter there as well. And he left calling cards. He used to take a razor blade and, like, leave a tiny cut on the back of the horses. Like, the horses, I don't think, would ever even notice that it was there. They weren't ever hurt. But he was raping horses in this village for, like, I think it was happening on and off for, like, 7 or 8 years at the time. So I don't think they ever caught the guy, but it's a thing, apparently.
Man, it's nothing. I don't know if anything will ever surprise me, because I hear so many awful stories, but this one does.
She made me laugh. She made me laugh a lot there.
Why?
I mean, it's so screwed up.
Maybe we should talk about this. How do we handle laughing? Because it's some of the stories are so absurd that they're funny, but then there's also a gallows humor kind of thing too.
Yeah, I've always kind of taken it head on, and I know I have a good spirit and you have a good spirit, and you hope it comes out through the entirety of our episodes and things that we do. If you don't believe that, you check out, and if you do, you stay checked in. There's not much we can do about it. If something tickles your fancy, not your fancy, if something
be careful with your words given the context here.
Yeah. If something tickles you, man, it's usually in the process before finding out the entirety of the horror that's about to go on. So I think we're pretty loose here.
Yeah. I think also what we're doing on Bad News Canada, if we're picking the worst of the worst stories, if this was like a straight face telling of these stories, it would be so dark that no one would ever want to listen to this.
No.
Because it's just kind of like a boiled down concentrated dose of the worst society and Canada has to offer. So we'll keep it light, but respectful.
Absolutely. And one more thing, there's something about it being a horse. So, like, they're so big. If it was a cow too, like, if it was a cat or a dog, we'd both be like, what the,
I wouldn't even be able to talk about it.
Probably wouldn't even talk about it. No,
yeah.
But there's something about it being such a large animal, and again, like I've said, like, you know that that animal, you hope, isn't scarred for life by it, unless they're cutting the back of it in Sweden.
Right. Yeah, what the hell? Like, leaving a calling card? Crazy. Let's move on to our second story. As I said, it's every story we're going to get into tonight. I said to myself as I was putting it together, this has to be one of the worst stories I've ever heard. This next story is going to take us to Lethbridge, Alberta, and we're going to call the story, I'll give it a name here, we'll just call it a horrific alleged sex offender's 30 minutes of freedom. We're going to travel to Lethbridge for a horror story that'll be told in two parts and served with a side of why the hell did the courts release this guy? Which is, as I said, a common dish served here in Canada.
You said a horror story, not a horse story, right?
A horror story. Let me be clear.
Oh, my God.
Enough of that.
I'm good.
Let's go back to December 19th, so just a little over a month ago. It's a week before Christmas, and police are just about to rescue a group of children who are being trafficked out of an apartment in Lethbridge, Alberta. This is where this story starts, so let's listen to a quick news clip to set the scene for this.
A horrifying reality is being exposed about what went on inside a Lethbridge apartment.
On December 19th of 2025, police responded to reports of a 14-year-old girl being unlawfully confined inside an apartment along the 500 block of 8th Street South.
When police went beyond the front door, they discovered she wasn't the only teenager being held captive.
And following the execution of a search warrant, two additional girls aged 15 and 16 were found inside the residence.
According to police, the 14-year-old girl was drugged and repeatedly sexually assaulted by multiple men over three terrifying days. The man arrested, 50-year-old Skye Atoa, has also been charged with a previous sexual assault dating back to October. Officers say that investigation was still ongoing when Atoa was arrested last month.
While the accused was in custody, we've been in a position to lay additional charges in relation to that investigation.
Police say, given their investigation and the evidence obtained, there could be more survivors who have yet to report what happened.
I encourage and ask anyone who may be a victim or may have additional information to come forward and contact us.
So we all know human trafficking is an epidemic in Canada. And stories like this, this idea of this, you know, 50-ish year old gross guy who has a bunch of like teenage girls in his house that he's making money off of other creepy people coming in and raping. We know those stories happen. They're horrific. I'm glad to hear that this guy got arrested and these, you know, girls will be protected and hopefully get, you know, the therapy they need to get their lives back on track. But this is just the beginning of the story. What makes this story such a shocking and bizarre event is what happens next. So we just heard a news clip from December 19th. The cops raid this apartment. He has the girls there. They have been abused. The girls are rescued. He's brought to jail. He's arrested. And he's also facing prior charges, as we heard in that clip. But while he was held in custody, the formal charges, they ended up getting filed on January 13th. But his court date for the charges was going to be February 2nd. So on January 13th, they released him from custody. Okay, so he's facing charges from an earlier event, charges from this event. He doesn't have to come to court till February 2nd. So they release him, and that's where the story picks
right
up.
Yeah.
Let's hear about his...
It picks up from there?
Let's listen to his 30 minutes of freedom.
Mood, everybody. Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they have found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever the type of buzz you want. I'm talking once again about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code DARKTOPIC. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. I'm a big fan of their Sexual Euphoria Advanced Gummies. I take them by myself. I like the 15-milligram Sexual Euphoria Advanced THC Gummies. They make me go from G-Wiz to Cheese Whiz in 15 minutes flat. Probably just lost the ad there. But I'm telling you, 5-15 minutes, you're ready to go. Going to the bathroom. Because I'm not involving my girl in this situation. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood. and everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code DARKTOPIC. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code DARKTOPIC when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
Just 30 minutes after being released on bail, accused sex offender and human trafficker Sky Atoa was rearrested for breaching his conditions. He was supposed to go straight to a court-ordered residence after his release Tuesday. Instead, Lethbridge police said the 50-year-old went to a store to browse a perfume aisle. That's where officers found Atoa near a young female and arrested him.
I believe it really necessitates, especially when it's crimes against anyone, but certainly against children, that they should be looking at very tough bail sentencing.
Atoa had been in custody since his arrest in mid-December. Atoa is charged with numerous offenses, including sexual assault of a child, trafficking a minor, and unlawful confinement. He's also charged with sexual assault of a 24-year-old woman last October. Some now question why he was granted bail in the first place.
I think the thing that's interesting about this is the timing of it all. That he was found to have been in breach of his bail conditions so immediately after being released.
Atoa will appear in court for a new charge of failing to comply with released order conditions on Thursday.
Now, police are also looking for a witness who was nearby Atoa when he was arrested Tuesday. The woman is described as having a dark complexion with long, curly black hair and was wearing a black top with dark blue pants at the time. The witness is being asked to contact police.
Yeah, that's a good point. What if it's detention for a kid in school? Maybe that's not unlawful.
It always gets me when they talk about unlawful confinement. Isn't confinement in and of itself unlawful?
Yes.
This is messed up, man. This is messed up.
Yeah. Him getting released alone is messed up because he's facing prior charges related to a 24-year-old that's a sex crimes. Then he gets arrested with the three underage kids in his apartment. The idea that they just charge him and release him after that, of course something is going to happen. And what does he do? The court orders him to, like, you leave here from custody and you go directly to, like, the address that you gave us, and you don't leave that address without, you know, our police knowing or whoever it is knowing about it. Instead, he goes to
the perfume aisle.
The perfume aisle of, I'm guessing, a drugstore, maybe, like, yeah. I'm thinking, or a Walmart or something. But what is Sky Atoa, this 50-something-year-old, bald, gross-looking man, doing in the perfume aisle, standing unusually close to a young girl, other than being a sick pervert?
He is really not good at what he does, which freaks me out, because so many people probably are good at what they do. This guy's
being... luckily he isn't.
Yeah.
But I think this is a case of the courts released him, but the police knew this guy is dangerous.
And they
because
watched.
Somebody had to follow him.
To figure that out, yeah.
Yeah, because it wasn't that he was doing anything overtly awful and the cops were called. A cop must have just walked, like, saw him go in there and followed him in and arrested him.
What a waste of resources.
Well, just keep him in custody.
Yeah, you had him.
Yeah.
If you're worried enough to send an officer, if that is the case, to follow this guy, then probably that's enough worry to keep him, but...
Yeah, but it's two hands, not obeying what the other's doing, because the courts will make the decisions on keeping you in custody or releasing you. And that's, they take some of the information the police give into consideration when they make that decision. But a cop can't say, keep him in custody, this guy's awful. That's the courts that say that. And I think the courts must have released him, and the cop who caught him knew, you know, this is not done. This guy's not going to stop.
And he didn't.
Yeah, and now he has to answer to that. But it takes something like this to prevent you from being released from custody. So at least no one got hurt in this, the perfume aisle. They're looking for a witness. I wonder what that's all about.
Yeah, I did. It almost sounded like it could be a friend of the perpetrator to me, but who knows? It's funny.
It could be that, or it could even be another shopper, and maybe they just want to say, true, like, we saw you on video near this guy. Did he say anything to you?
Yeah, yeah. It's funny that cop smelled something funny, and then he ended up in the perfume aisle.
We have a very big and very awful story right around the corner. Let's take our final break. When we get back, again, I'll say this is the worst of the worst. We're going to hear a story that I think is likely the story of a Canadian serial killer, but we just don't know about his victims yet. This is a story coming out of Calgary. It's developing now, developing fast, and it is just getting worse and worse by the moment. But one thing that makes it really interesting is police officers investigating it have said it is the most clear-cut example of self-defense they've ever seen in Canada. So we'll get into that after a short break.
Yeah.
Let's get into the last one here, Jack Luna. Calgary police have confirmed that the death of a man inside an Edgemont home earlier this month was the result of self-defense after an unprovoked attack during a rental property showing. Investigators have described the case as one of the clearest examples of lawful self-defense in Canadian history. Let's listen into a bit of news coverage of the story of the woman who got lured into a Calgary home but killed her attacker in self-defense. Here it comes.
Police are calling this a brazen and traumatizing attack, not just for the woman, but the entire community. Moments after it happened, the woman ran to a neighbor's home for help.
I opened the door. She was covered in blood, had a knife in her hand, and was yelling and screaming. I feel awful, but I also feel very proud of this young lady for defending her dad, defending herself, and, you know, unfortunately, she'll be traumatized forever, right?
Alex Hansen says she has known the woman since she was a baby because her family used to live in the home they now use as a short-term rental unit. Now, it's a quiet neighborhood, but police filled the area just after 4 Friday afternoon. The woman in her 30s was meeting a man in his 40s to show him the rental property for a second time. They were in the basement of a home along Edgemont Court. Her father was there too, but police say he was in another part of the room when the man attacked the woman unprovoked. She fought back, then ran to the neighbor who called 911. The man was declared dead at the scene. The victim was taken to hospital in stable condition. Now her family says that she was badly beaten. Police say the killing is a non-culpable homicide, meaning the woman did not act with criminal intent or negligence.
I can say that in my experience in the homicide unit, this is the easily the most clear-cut case of self-defense that I have ever been involved in. She did everything right. This is a great example of someone who is completely innocent and had to suffer a very traumatic experience at the hands of a perpetrator.
Police have identified the man killed as 48-year-old Shabazz Ahmed. Investigators say that he was known to police, but don't say how. They also don't believe that the man attacked other women, but if there are other victims, police would like to hear.
What do you want to say about this one?
Well, I mean, I have women in my life and friends of mine whose wives are realtors, and they say this all the time, that they don't want to go to these things when by themselves because the men act creepy. It's happens to them all the time.
I never really thought about that, but whether you're a real estate agent or you're showing rental properties, you're alone with someone you don't know.
Yeah.
In a vacated, like empty, abandoned in some cases place. And in this case, she was the woman involved in this story, who thank God survived, she was already uncomfortable and decided to bring her dad. And I don't know the story with him, but it's in that news clip, it said he was in another part of the room. But the impression I got from reading is that he was in another part of the apartment, maybe the bathroom, maybe another unit. I don't know.
You know, that part bothered me too, because she brought her dad along to protect her, and obviously that did not happen. But when you heard that woman talk, she said that she also protected her father, which gives us some insight into the details that have not been yet revealed. Maybe he did try to help and she helped him in some way, or she was thinking, I need to protect her father, might be elderly. I don't know.
Yeah. And she does show up at a neighbor's house alone. We heard from the neighbor there. She shows up next door covered in blood with a knife in her hand. Mm-hmm. If her dad was close to her, her dad would have been there for that. You wouldn't have took off next door, but...
Yeah,
I would like to know, but I've heard it referred to as a large unit and that the dad was in another part of the unit. So we really don't know much about that. We do know, we also don't know the identity of the woman who survived this attack. We know the perpetrator, his name is Shabazz Ahmed, and this guy is bad news. We're going to talk about this. They say in that news clip that we just listened to, they don't know if he's attacked other women before.
Yeah.
After this news clip aired, a lot of stuff about his past has come up that, again, for the third time tonight, we're going to roll our eyes at Canada's justice system for allowing this guy to be on the streets. But let's learn a little bit more about what happened in this apartment, because the woman who survived, the 30-year-old who managed to kill her attacker, her family released a long statement that goes into some depth. So if you want to light up a fresh cigarette, Jack, I'll read this.
I'll light two, and the train rolls through Western Canada. I'm sorry if you can hear that.
On Friday, January 9th, our sweet baby girl was showing a man bigger, stronger, and older than her a unit for rent for the second time when he attacked her and assaulted her unprovoked and premeditated. One of the reasons why we are sharing this is because we hope no vulnerable, innocent woman or man ever has to go through this living nightmare. If her story saves one life, that'll be a miracle. Our family's not okay. We're shattered. We're walking around like we're functioning, but it feels like something inside us broke and we can't quite put it back together. Someone we love more than we can explain was brutally attacked and left fighting for her life. She's the kind of person who makes other people feel safe, and now we're trying to help her understand how something this evil could happen to her. The first hit knocked her unconscious, and when she woke up, she didn't wake up to safety. She woke up into a living nightmare, something straight out of a horror movie. She tried to escape again and again, and she fought with everything in her just to breathe while he was trying to strangle her to death and gripped his hand over her mouth so she couldn't breathe. She tried so hard just to make it to the next second, just to stay alive for another moment. When we saw her, it didn't feel real as we broke down in tears when the reality set in that we almost lost our baby girl. Her face was so swollen and bruised we barely could recognize her. Her body was bruised from head to toe, one eye swollen completely shut, and still hasn't been able to open for several days. She suffered broken bones, scratches, the aftermath of a possible concussion and whiplash. Her hair was so matted from the struggle and the blood that it took over 13 hours and professional help to untangle. For the first couple of days after the assault, she was beaten so badly she was bedridden and unable to move or function without her family by her side 24/7, and from trying to break free and run to safety. I kept thinking about her waking up and realizing that what she was trapped in. I keep thinking about the fear she must have felt, the helplessness, the shock, the moment she realized she might not get to come home and be able to hug her loved ones and tell them she loved them one more time. She didn't want to hurt anyone. She tried for so long to fight him off and just to escape. But when she was about to take her last breath, she did what she had to do to survive and defended herself from this man that was trying to take her life. She managed to escape. She got to safety. She called the police. She did the impossible. We're heartbroken and furious. We're grieving who she was before this happened, because something was taken from her that day that she'll never get back. And the most painful part is that she has to carry this for the rest of her life. And then it ends with, please, any real estate agents and rental managers or anyone out there, take precautions and be safe.
Mm.
So it's a little long-winded, but what that gives us is a look at, into a horrific assault that very well could have killed her.
It
and it seems like it's a miracle that she managed to, I don't know if she got a knife away from him or what. Yeah. We don't really know what exactly happened.
I think I see it. I think I see what I see, like in my mind's eye, and the listener will see what I saw reading that. I think she was so close to getting killed there. She got beaten like crazy. She ripped, choked, her eye swollen shut, punched in the face, head to toe, they said, broken bones. She escaped at some point and got recaptured is what I heard there, I believe. Mm-hmm. I think that she got out and was able to reach the kitchen, where it's the only place where you would find a knife. I can't imagine, unless she was holding a knife on herself. I don't know. In my mind, I saw her getting loose, running to the kitchen and stabbing him to death. I believe it was a torso stab that finished him.
Whatever it was, it must have been, you know, it was lucky that she managed to make that happen. Because when you hear the injuries, it doesn't sound like a beating. It sounds like she survived a plane crash, like whiplash, concussion,
bruises. He was whipping her around the room. The hand over the mouth is to keep her from screaming because he knows someone else is in the home. That'd be her father, right? This is a story you normally wouldn't hear. It's almost like hearing a story from a ghost. telling you what happened to them and wanting everyone to know about it. But she survives. So she
manages to survive.
She's telling us.
Now, you asked like what I see and what I think may have happened. You pitched there the idea that maybe she managed to somehow get into the kitchen and grab a knife. I want to cue up another story here, because as I said, when this came out and became big in the news that this had happened in Calgary, other people who had connections to this man started coming out of the woodwork and sharing their stories. One is a 70-year-old man named Harold Henniger. He met Shaibez Ahmed in June of 2023 when he was trying to sell him a vehicle during some kind of like local car show. It seems it was this Friday night car show where people would bring their cars and check them out or whatever.
Yeah.
This 70-year-old man meets the perpetrator there. Shaibez Ahmed wants to buy the guy's car but doesn't have the money, so he says, "Drive me to my house, I'll get the money and I'll buy the car from you." Listen to Harold Henniger appearing on Global News to tell the story of what happens next.
All right.
It was supposed to be a routine sale. Harold Henniger says he and his wife were driving Shaibez Ahmed to his home in Airdrie to get the cash. But as the drive went on, a feeling of unease settled on the couple.
I told my wife to stop the car, get out, and flag down somebody and call the police, because this isn't right, what's going on. And that's when he took the knife out of his briefcase.
While Henniger, who's in his 70s, fought back, Ahmed ran off and was eventually arrested. He faced nearly a half dozen charges in that case, including assault with a weapon, robbery, and failure to comply with a release order. After a 2.5-year process, he was found not guilty on all charges last October.
He fired his lawyer and got him another 6 months free on the streets. And just kept billing himself out all the time.
Hearing of the terrifying story involving Ahmed's death at an Edgemont home last week has left Henniger recollecting how threatening of a situation he was in.
I don't have to worry about him anymore. He's gone, but I hope that the government looks after the lady that had to kill him, because I know the trauma that you go through over that deal.
For the Henningers, they say that trauma ranges from PTSD to a hip damaged so badly during the fight that he's still waiting for a replacement. And he says this most recent incident should never have happened.
He's been running free all the time, and he should be locked up.
What a sweet old man that is. That's a true Canadian old boy there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Doing the hockey telecast he could be.
Yeah, but the reason I played that clip was, for one, to give a look at this man's criminal history and the fact that he was found not guilty for this event and was still on the streets. But also, in this case, he had a briefcase with him with a knife in it. He's in the car with this old man on the way to his apartment to get the money to buy the car, and that's when he takes the knife out. So I wonder, with the woman showing him the apartment, I wonder if he also had a knife with him.
Ah, in that case. Good. You think she might have got it off of him?
Perhaps, yeah.
You might be right.
But that said, when we hear about her injuries, that never listed anything to do with like stab wounds or anything, and they probably would have listed that. My only thought is, if he introduces the knife in the middle of the fight, you would think she would have had a stab wound. But it just does kind of makes his MO a little bit to involve knives in robberies. Although we don't know his motive for attacking her. With this old man, it seems like the motive was probably financial theft. To steal the car.
Hey, but listen, the fact, this bothers me about this case, that this guy, Shaibez, he had set up this appointment. So they had his information, possibly, unless he used a different name. He had made himself very familiar with this situation, coming back twice to it.
Yeah.
So the motive could have just been, who knows what his mental health is like, his state. This is one that we're going to have to come back to and follow up on and fill in some of these blanks. We can speculate all we want.
Mm-hmm. Well, you remember I said at the beginning that I have a feeling that this guy is a serial killer. Here's why, because even more is coming out about Shaibez Ahmed's history. Only 2 months after he pulled the knife out and held it to Harold Henniger's throat, Ahmed was a landlord to a 71-year-old man named Abdul Mafti, who went missing and is now presumed to be dead. Let me play a little news clip that gives you some of the basics about this.
All right.
Tara, I spoke with a couple neighbors and residents in this area along Falworth Way here in the northeast. That white home you can see over my shoulder, that was where Ahmed was living, and up until his death last Friday, he was renting out that home, according to neighbors. This home is also the last place that 71-year-old Abdul Mufti in 2023 was last seen at before his disappearance, and police believe he is dead. Now, in August of 2023, if you remember, police executed a warrant at this home owned by Ahmed. He later then sold that home, but neighbors say he has been renting it from the owner since last summer up until his death last Friday. Police identified a person of interest in the theft of Mufti's credit cards at the time he went missing, but that person was later released. Investigators would not confirm today if that person was Shabazz Ahmed, nor would they link Mufti's disappearance to him. Now, homicide detectives, as we mentioned, say Mufti is dead. Harold Henninger told CTV News yesterday that in June of 2023, he was attempting to sell an antique car to Ahmed. That's when Ahmed held a knife to his throat. Henninger said it was this home here on Falworth Way that Ahmed asked him to meet at to collect the money, but he never did. RCMP then charged Ahmed, but he was later found not guilty.
This is crazy, man. This is crazy because the previous victims, as you're saying, he could be a serial killer. Those are males. And those are robberies.
And two old men, too. A 70-year-old Harold Henninger, this 71-year-old Mufti guy.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're easy targets for a younger man. But this case that we're talking about, where he gets killed in, is a young woman with her dad in the place. It escalates in a... It's not his M.O.
But I wonder how old her dad is, and I wonder if the plan was to get the dad alone and the daughter should... Like, more is going to come out, of course, but... And that also said, like, I think a lot of, like, 40, 50-year-old men would see a lone 30-year-old female as vulnerable as well, especially if you have a knife.
You got it. You got it. Because the dad was the owner of that property, and the daughter was the realtor. He made her his, you know, their business together. So he maybe was not expecting her to be there, and when she was in his state, did what he did. I never considered that, because I've been looking into this case. He was targeting the dad.
Yeah, I think so. But it's whatever was going on, this guy's motivation doesn't seem to necessarily be financial. Although the 71-year-old who went missing and is, I think he likely killed, it seems like that was about credit cards. Harold Henninger, the 70-year-old man we heard from, that was about maybe getting an antique car.
Yeah.
The woman in the apartment, she wouldn't have money on her.
No, but maybe she got in the way. We don't know. Like, maybe there was an altercation between the dad and him, now that you're on that track, and the daughter got involved and he got pissed.
Yeah, because they did say he saved her father. She saved her father. It's something
that has been said.
So there's certainly more to this story. And I guess it's, since this isn't going to go to court, the guy's dead. And I'm, like everyone else has said in the clips we've seen, I'm proud of her for being able to pull that off, because she did what the justice system hadn't been and wouldn't have been able to do.
That's what the old boy said there too. He's like, I'm thankful that he's gone. I don't got to worry about it no more. He's clearly, by him saying that, he was worried.
Yeah. And he's not the only one. I want to play another clip here. And I don't know how well you know the story of Lindsay Buziak. She was a realtor who was murdered while showing a home in Saanich, BC. This is back in February of 2008. This is one of Canada's highest profile crimes. Her father, Jeff Buziak, has been a staunch advocate for both her case in trying to find who murdered his daughter, but also is taking steps to advocate for people like real estate agents to prevent them from getting in the kind of position that his daughter was in when some still unknown person was able to kill her while she was showing a home. And it also seems like she was set up, like she was lured to the home as well. Mm-hmm. He commented to media on this case. Listen to this.
Her story, all too familiar for real estate broker Jeff Buziak. In 2008, his daughter Lindsay, a realtor, was killed showing a couple a home in BC. No arrests were ever made.
I am so grateful that the woman who was showing is okay. I'm glad the attacker is dead. because they get what they deserve.
For those who make a living selling homes, it's a gut check. Realtor Victoria Dalgliesh does financial background checks on clients while also parking her vehicle on the street instead of the driveway.
When people are walking around the house, instead of backing yourself into a corner, you want to stay where there's a door.
She's also ready with a designated emergency contact at the touch of a fingertip and no self-defense.
How do you stay where there's a door when you got to show the whole house?
Well, maybe if let's say you're bringing them into like a bathroom, keep your back to the door in the hall.
Okay.
Same with the bedrooms.
Gotcha.
But just hearing that clip, I've never would have considered the risk a real estate agent would have, and that they have to train for that. Like, you know, as you're walking through the house, to always have your back to the doors and stuff. It makes total sense, but maybe I'm so innocent. I never even considered that. Hey. But the risk a real estate agent would have would not be a lot different than like an escort or something. And, you know, you hear all the time of those kinds of crimes against vulnerable people like sex workers. But a real estate agent also is in like empty buildings with people they don't know.
Yeah. Well, the thing with escorts, not that I know a lot about it. I know nothing about it. Swear my kids. But the thing is, they usually have a dude looking out for them in the driveway. And they're a lot bigger and stronger and scarier and built for dealing with things going awry than say, a 70-year-old man.
But a real estate agent wouldn't have that. A real estate agent pulls up in their BMW and
right.
their cell phone and walks in there?
Yes, yeah. I got to ask you this. Anytime, so I've worked in like social services and worked with a lot of women, and my rule always personally was to make them comfortable. If we had to go into an office to talk about something, I would make sure the door's left open. And if the door got closed, I'd ask, is it okay for the door to be closed? I don't want to be in any situation with a woman in a closed room with me.
Mm-hmm.
Really. And
yeah, I don't think I like consciously think about it.
You probably
do it
though.
But I probably subconsciously, like I think I'd be able to sense it. I hope so. If I was making someone, I couldn't imagine going in a room with a woman and like shutting the door. Like,
have you ever done that?
No, that'd be really weird. I think I wouldn't even need to think to not do it because I don't
right.
think I would.
Right.
But
right.
the idea that a real estate agent is encouraged to train martial arts and, you know, have an emergency contact, it's a shame that that's necessary.
It is
but
a shame.
It totally is.
It's totally necessary.
Yeah,
man.
And it would be so easy to set them up. Wasn't there a major documentary, Making a Murderer? Wasn't that also a real estate agent who was set up?
Well, the Stephen Avery case?
Yeah. Didn't he set up a real – or if he did it or whatever.
Yeah,
didn't
you're right.
Didn't involve a real estate agent?
That's why it's ringing a bell for me too. You're right.
I think he had her come out.
I got to do a shout-out here. My buddy Ken Chungus from True Crime Kent, a great podcast, is about to cover that case. We've been talking about it. But, yeah, I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, this one is another – this one being this story out of Calgary is just another example of Canada's justice system not nipping it in the butt before it became a bigger problem. Each of the cases we had tonight – well, actually, not the horse.
Absolutely. Dude, I got it. I think I heard a lot of what you just said past you saying nipping it in the butt.
Yeah. Do you know –
It's the bud.
Okay, the jury's out on that. Here's the thing. That saying, nipping it in the bud, would imply...
Well, nipping it in the bud is making the plant grow more so by nipping things off, I assume. Nipping it in the butt?
Yeah, nipping in the bud would be like pulling like a little bud off the
to
plant
make
or whatever,
it grow
to control
more
its
so.
Growth
Absolutely.
The right way or whatever. But I say nipping in the butt because, you know, my beautiful daughter, Penny, who is a dog,
yes.
she does something. Mm-hmm. She has like herding instincts. So she does nipping because these dogs were bred to like herd sheep and all this stuff. And they would use these little bites, nipping, to keep them all together.
Okay.
But nipping in the butt would be something that a dog would do to get you in line. So I would think the justice system could have nipped this in the butt like a herding dog would have to get this guy taken care of.
I apologize.
So I think both sayings.
I apologize.
I will defend myself. Both sayings work.
I'm happy you actually educated me there, man. So thank. I just thought you were an idiot.
Both sayings work.
Excellent. I mean, I love that we can call each other and stuff. I'm sure I'm going to make some. My mistakes will be outright mistakes going on in the future.
That wasn't, yeah, and because that wasn't a mistake, just to be clear.
I agree. I agree now. Well, snip that right in the butt. Let's snip that right in the butt, buddy.
For listeners out there, this is our maiden voyage of Bad News Canada. We plan to do one of these every second or third week. The jury's still out on that, but we want your input. Go to thecanadiangothic.com/contact. Let us know, is this a good series? Should we keep doing it? How often should we do it? Is there any format changes you would like? Is there any stories you'd like to see covered? Go to thecanadiangothic.com/contact and let us know. Anything you want to say to the people out there, Jack?
No, I'm just happy to be here, man, and happy to be a part of the multiverse as becoming the Canadian, that is the Canadian Gothic, and I look forward to more episodes. I know the answer to what you just asked the audience. I think they liked it. I know I enjoyed myself, and there are so many stories out there that we could have covered, but we're going to... I got a question for you. Are we going to go month to month? It's going to be very recent activity that we're going to be shooting at?
I think so. I think we should. I think the way I see this is this podcast, Bad News Canada, this series, is like opening a newspaper that only has the three worst stories from the past week or two. That way it's they're developing stories so we can have, you know, if anything major happens in any of these stories, in our next episode, we can provide updates so we can keep people up to
abreast.
Date. But it's I'd rather do that than do historical stories.
Okay.
You know what
I'm
saying?
I know what you're saying exactly. Yeah.
But really, and I'm holding my fist up, I'm just happy to be doing something with you, Jack. Fist bump.
Oh, shit, I just burnt my monitor. Yeah.